Welcome to The Wilds Docs, a podcast reviewing the Amazon Prime show The Wilds with three doctors, Dr. Emily Kirchner, Dr. Katie Duda, and Dr. Avril Earls.
Welcome back to The Wilds Docs podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Katie.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Avril, and I'm responsible for our 1 minute recap. And let's see if I can actually do it in 1 minute. Okay. So
can we time you? Should we time you?
Set a timer. Okay. Ready?
No, I'm not. Where's my phone?
You just wrote timer in the Google Doc.
Did I? I was trying to type it in my search and like we're doing so great already.
This is a good start. This doesn't count toward my time. This episode, episode 10, is a big episode, but also small in some ways. So in terms of characters that it focuses on with backstory, we get Nora, and Nora is introduced as taking a college class. She meets this boy. She connects with him. They have sex. They're kind of maybe in love. But then she invites her sister to this campus to meet him. Her sister is a jerk, which then poisons Nora's view of this boy. And so she breaks up with him. And then as she's like thinking about him while she's back at her school, she realizes she misses him. She tries to check in on him. And he has apparently died in a horrible frat hazing incident. Cut to her. She goes to try and meet with the frat boy who killed her lost love. And who's waiting in the waiting room outside the prison? None other than Gretchen herself. So here we introduce Nora into Gretchen's world. And this is where we find out that Nora is, well, we knew this last episode. Nora is, that was 1 minute already? Shit. Whatever. Nora is the inside.
We've been false advertising this all season.
All season, so. That's fine. Nora is the inside candidate, the Manchurian candidate, perhaps. And she has bought into Gretchen's vision for a time away from the horrible pressures of her life, because she has extreme social anxiety and she struggles to be around people. And Gretchen has given her this opportunity to get away from it all and just live and survive and whatever else, and also help her sister Rachel, ostensibly. And that's pretty much where I want to leave it, because I'm sure we're going to unpack the Gretchen stuff, the what's happening on the island, because of course we know Marty killed a goat. She's returning from that. Shelby and Tony had sex, perhaps, and they're returning with the fruits of their love, and also from a tree. Leah was wandering around in the dark on drugs, but discovered Nora talking to the camera tree. And Nora knows that Leah knows, and Leah pretends that she doesn't remember, but she does. And then at some point in the episode, well, we'll talk about what happens. We can unpack that a little bit in our discussions. So let's just jump right in to some background information. Anyone look anything up?
Well, we have a male director, right? So the director for this episode is John Paulson, who is already, this is his third episode this season. So he did day two, day three. And then of course this was day 23. So we have kind of talked about him already. Other than that background, still written by Sarah Stryker, we don't really have anything new to add for this last episode.
It's true.
No, I mean, it's interesting that he directed day two, because that was
Leah.
Rachel's day, right? Rachel's episode. Yeah. So we see in some ways the return to Rachel's story through the experiences of her sister. Not that one is primary over the other, but we return to that.
And certainly he would need like a working knowledge of Rachel and what she's going through to convey why Nora would be so concerned about her enough to like buy into this crazy wild plan to go be on an island in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. And then there's stuff with Leah and the prison.
Oh yeah. Then there's the stuff.
The current with Leah and the prison. Mm-hmm. Which we have clearly figured out is underground. We know some things now.
You know
we know a lot of things, But we're left with, of course, more questions.
So many questions. They're...
We're left with actually a huge set of questions.
Should we start with the mystery or should we end with the mystery?
End with the mystery.
All right. So then let's do hot takes on this one. First thing I want to bring up is, so when Nora meets Gretchen in the prison, Gretchen like feels really bad that Nora is here to visit her, this boy, because, you know, Nora has lost someone and that the boy in prison is the one who killed the someone. And then we are told by Gretchen that the boy in prison, the killer, he is Gretchen's son, Devin.
Yes. He has his they share a last name as well.
They do. Oh, I double checked that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Klein is their last name.
Okay. So maybe he really is her son, although we've been skeptical of this the whole season. But then Gretchen invites Nora to get breakfast, and they go get pancakes at a diner. And Gretchen starts explaining how all the things that are terrible about teenage girl life, what Nora's experiencing, but what girls experience more broadly, are all because of the patriarchy, right? Patriarchy. And she gives a speech where she gives little caption summaries of girls' experiences of the world. And that is paired with these montages of scenes of all of the other seven girls who end up on the island. And so my question to Katie and Emily is, do you think that she has already identified the girl she wants for the study and she is summarizing what she knows about their lives? Or are those the criteria that she has identified for girls' experiences of the world and she needs to now fill them with people, and that's how she ends up somehow with the other seven girls?
Well, just like everything else on the show, timeline is so jacked up. We have no idea how long this is before they're on the island, how much we just have no idea about anything. The one thing I can say is that in this conversation, Nora, I tried to pay attention, has not mentioned her sister at all. She has not mentioned her sister to Gretchen, and they're having this conversation and she says, like, what's happening with your sister? And I was like, why, how does she know about her sister? Like, there's something else. Like, it was a little thing. You had to actually be paying attention to catch it. Right. But she mentions her sister, and Nora had not mentioned her sister to Gretchen. So it seems like she knows more about Nora than she's letting on. And I think she was doing that manipulative thing that she always does. So like when she first meets Nora and she says, oh, are you just one of the groupies? That's what she says. Like, girls who try to get in with the bad boy, so they come visit him in prison. I think she's playing a game. I've been in a prison waiting room. You're not gonna just like sit around all day and not know for sure if you're going to be visiting someone. And if your son was in there, you certainly know how the system works at that point. So like, to me, this whole thing was just hugely manipulative. Do I think she has identified the girls? I don't know, because I think all of those characteristics represent teenage girl life.
Yeah, because I mean, there were some pretty vague descriptions, right? Like the pressure to succeed. And then of course the image is fat and playing the cello, which I thought was an interesting choice because that wasn't my impression of why Fatten was on the island.
I thought it was the pressure for perfection, to be perfect.
Yeah, it was perfection.
Right. Okay. But still.
Oh, yeah.
But still, that's a pretty vague statement. And then we fill it in with that content, right? Taking on more than they can handle. That was Dot, right? Like that obvious, that has a lot of power because we know Dot's story. But if I heard that sentence at the beginning, I don't know that that would resonate, or without the image, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, again, we don't have a sense of timeline, except we know that this is roughly around contemporaneous with Rachel's sort of descent into her overtraining and eating disorder.
Yes, we do know that because she goes for a midnight run. She's going to get in one more run.
One more run, which we, again, takes us back to the second episode, roughly, right? Where we see her try and do that and collapse. So, yeah, I don't know in terms of choice, because we don't know how these stories line up with each other, other than the ones that actually intersect with each other. So that's a tricky thing. Mm-hmm.
To me, that conversation though is like pivotal in this whole thing, right? Yeah. That conversation that she has with Nora, because to me, that conversation, and I was the first one to jump on the bandwagon that like Devin is not Gretchen's son. But after rewatching it, I actually feel differently.
Mm-hmm.
I actually do believe that Devin is her son. And what really caught me this time was her need, it was a need to blame the patriarchy for what had happened to her son, that like because of the patriarchy, he bought into this, you know, terrible, cruel world that is sometimes Greek life and fraternities. And he had to do to others what had been done to him his freshman year, right? And it had caused the life of Quinn. But because of her blaming the patriarchy, it sets up her need for this experiment. And I think that maybe at some point she had done something similar, but not made these strict like differences between, you know, matriarchy and patriarchy rules and how that might play out in the scenarios we're seeing. But I think that moment for her is, I have to show that women could do better. That was my reading of what had happened with her son.
Yeah. I mean, can we talk about the reveal at the end then? Because the reveal at the end throws me a little bit for that, about how the show understands better, because just based on that chat that Gretchen has with Nora, I presume that better means that they will thrive, right? Like she's asking, are you thriving? Is your sister thriving? Like, is everybody thriving? But then at the end, when we find out that there's a control group called the Twilight of Adam, which seems to have dudes, like, now I'm wondering, like, but I just don't know why that would be a direct comparison in terms of better, right? Does that make sense?
So for context here, Leah in the future set, you know, in the setting of the prison where they're all being held and detained and question, she escapes her room at some point, runs around, and then finds a room with an unlocked red door, and there are security monitors showing footage of boys on an island similar to the island they had been on, and there's a folder just sitting out there that says the Twilight of Adam, and it's next to the Dawn of Eve project. So what I think,
and it says control group actually on the envelope or on the folder as well.
And so, but I think it's, well, I think it's interesting that it's the Twilight of Adam, right? Like this is the end of patriarchy, and then the Dawn of Eve is going to be the new world. So, unpack that, Emily.
You want me to unpack that? That's a lot to unpack. One thing I will say about this room that she stumbles upon to see this control group situation, I believe that this experiment has been done before. I've said that. I am surprised. I don't know if surprised is the word. But we see the like control room for the Dawn of Eve.
Mm-hmm.
It's this massive room, huge camera screens, lots of computers. And then this control group setting where we're observing is like one tiny room with like five or six, I don't remember. But like, it was such a different setup and there wasn't anyone sitting there.
Right.
So like, are they really observing?
Well, so I had a question about this that was I ever to presume that the control room, the sort of modern, minimalistly decorated control room with the, you know, with the IMAX viewing screens, was that on the same place that they're doing the debriefing? Because if they're doing the debriefing, why isn't there just a secondary feed to a secondary, right, set of monitors? Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Now, that I still think that there's something to be said about the choices that of what they show us, right? Like, there is that disconnect between we've never heard of this project up to this point. And we have seen Gretchen and her team obsessed with the Dawn of Eve project. To think that there's an ongoing control project that has not taken any of their emotional or mental capability, you know, it hasn't demanded of them anything. But you know, that right now that begs credulity, as yeah, as Leah said at the end of the episode, what the fuck?
What the fuck?
Yeah, that summed it up nicely.
But it feels very staged. Don't you think it feels staged? Like, I don't believe that, first of all, no, that Leah got out of her room of her own device. I don't think that they don't know that she's getting out of her room. I think that they know exactly what she's doing, and they've left this room for her or someone in her cohort to find.
That's interesting.
Did you also notice that the clips that you see of the boys, everything seems very like harmonious and like working? Like, oh, mm-hmm, we have food and we have fire and like everyone seems to be working as a team. And like, I've read Lord of the Flies. Like, this is not, you know, what you should expect. So I agree that it seems like a plant. And for, we've placed this, you know, extreme importance on observation the entire time. It's an experiment. Like, you're supposed to be observing at all times. And they just happen to leave this one room where it actually needs somebody to watch it all times, like, not manned.
Yeah, don't believe it for a second.
Mm-mm. No, that seems, and why is the door red?
Like, why is the door red? Yeah. In a facility that is all gray, you paint one friggin' door red.
Yeah, it's very weird.
Yeah. It's very weird. Too sus, as the youths say.
It's too sus.
I do also like how there's like an old-fashioned doorknob that's what allows Leah to get in and out of her room, yeah, right?
it's a little ridiculous.
It's all contrived. I think it's all contrived.
Well, yeah.
I mean, obviously there's the second season.
Yes.
We're not there yet.
And there, do we all agree that there's no way that the second season isn't also on the island? It has to be.
Well, okay, so remember we talked before,
yeah,
about time lapse, how much time has passed.
Yeah.
The only things we really know is, well, first, this also ends with Rachel, we presume, about to be attacked by a shark.
Well, there's blood in the water, so she got attacked by a shark.
Yeah, so we're guessing this is where she loses her hand.
And she's been handless since episode 2.
And she lives. We know that where that has been amputated is healed.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's not going to happen in a short period of time. Also, Shelby has no hair.
Yes.
Right? So, like, there has been plenty of things that have happened from one place to the other. We don't know if Martha's alive.
Nope, we do not.
We don't actually know if Nora's alive.
No, yeah, we don't know if Nora's alive. So, like, and
Leah knows things, so one has to, you know, I'm worried for Nora's safety at this point. Well, also, is Shelby, where her hair is shaved, is her skin red or brown, or is it white like it was shaved after she got off the island?
I feel like it's a little brown, but I definitely felt that way, but maybe I wasn't paying that close of attention.
I'm going to just reopen the episode real quick while we keep talking.
So, I mean, on the concept of Shelby, so something else that I think is worth mentioning, it had to be a paying attention thing. When we hear Code Purple, we assume that everyone is chasing Leah. But instead, they respond to Shelby's room where she's going into anaphylactic shock. So she's allergic to something. There is a
bowl. Oh, we know what she's allergic to. Yes. She's allergic to shellfish.
There's a bowl of soup next to her, right? And she has said over and over and over and over and over and over that she's allergic to shellfish. So that had to have been done to her.
Mm-hmm. By who?
Well, somebody who delivers her food, I would assume. Because it's not like they get to go to, like, the local, you know, McDonald's and pick out their food. So I don't know.
Well,
other than that, supports your idea that they knew that Leah was doing these things, and Shelby was the one that tipped her off. Right. So now it's like, let's take out Shelby.
Unless also Shelby is a plant. Just kidding. I have no idea.
That would make no sense.
What it thought, because if they
did, once they can see that.
If they didn't know that she had dissociative...
Which one of Shelby's?
Right, maybe one of the Shelby's is a helper to Gretchen's experiment.
Can we get... Just before we go down that rabbit hole of unanswerable questions. The anaphylaxis doesn't make... To me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense either way.
No. Yeah, they would know that she's allergic to shellfish.
I would hope so. I hope they would not just delve into people's, like, psychologies and be like, oh, right, you have medical conditions. Well, that might affect our situation.
The other weird thing is that Leah doesn't leave her room until it's lights out. So Leah leaves because it's lights out. Why is Shelby eating soup?
Yeah.
It's lights out. I don't know. And some of me think that, like, you know, we're looking way too far into this and that we're just pointing out, like, plot holes.
That's possible, too.
Yeah. We don't know.
That's why these are the hot takes.
No idea.
To maybe get into the theme of the episode as being... So, Gretchen... When she sits down with Nora at the diner, I was going to say the pancake restaurant, but same thing. She immediately starts to, like, psychoanalyze and diagnose her and says, oh, you have social anxiety. And then we end with this promise, that conversation, we don't end the episode, but we end the conversation, the kind of promise to Nora of a world that will be stripped of fear, right? Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering how you all read that. Like, is that just Gretchen kind of being dishonest, as we also see one of my biggest irrational fears, which is being eaten by a shark in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Also, I have an allergy to shellfish, so anaphylaxis is also a fear.
Something we pay attention to over here, you know.
Well, the juxtaposition of, like, the socially constructed fears of patriarchy versus the, like, actual fears of starvation or inclement, you know, weather-related death or shark attacks or infections.
Well, she says that this promise she is making to her is all it's going to require is focusing on surviving, breathing, and becoming yourself. I guess that's true.
It's true in some ways, right? Like, we see Rachel have a huge breakthrough moment where they are eating goat and whatever that fruit is. What's the fruit?
Lychee.
Lychee, and she has eaten enough to be full, and she says, man, it feels so good to be full. Don't let me forget that when we get back.
That scene where all that is happening, I'm like skipping all around. That is my favorite part of this entire episode. So, and I know that probably sounds really stupid, but I'll tell you why. So that scene comes after Nora tells Gretchen, I'm going to tell you what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And Nora says, I want first to help my sister. And so she's like talking, and then we go to the whole I'm full thing. And then he goes back to Nora. I don't want to be afraid to be myself. And then it goes to Tony and Shelby. And then it's, I don't want to be afraid to be in love with who I want to be in love with. And we see Shelby and Tony have this, like, you know, come to Jesus moment together and kiss. I want to find my people. And then we see Dot and Fatten playing a game. And I want to find my strength. We see Leah climb out of the hole, which I didn't think she would get out of. And then I want to make a life doing, trying, and fighting. And we see Rachel in the water. And then she concludes that sentence with, I want a life where I can just be. And then we see Rachel say, I'm going to just go float. And then, like, that's the end of, you know, what Nora is asking for. But the way that that was shot, the writing of it, it was beautiful. Like, it brought everything full circle. It was just, like, if you knew that was going to happen and you're, you know, Nora trying to figure out if you should do this and you could see those flashbacks, you'd be like, yes, I am in. We are doing this. And, of course, that's going to end with a shark, you know, mauling her sister. But she doesn't know that yet.
She doesn't know that yet. So, you know, ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. But yeah, that is my favorite part of this entire episode. The camera angles, just every single thing about it was absolutely lovely.
And then pairing that or contrasting that with the Gretchen montage, right? Where we're talking about all the things in their lives before the island, all the mm-hmm. bad things that seem to be tearing them down, and then how they change as people because of this traumatic but freeing experience.
Is that an argument for this all being good?
Well, so I think in that moment, right, it is. It's like, here is why all this is good. But I believe, and this is going into the second season, I believe that is the absolute last minute of normalcy on the island, because what we've had happen is we know that Rachel has just been attacked by a shark. We have Leah pretty much maybe about to kill Nora and say everything that she knows. So that is the last minute of normalcy in this.
Yeah. And then we need a reason for an investigator to look into Martha's past to explain away to parents why something has happened on the island. So either, again, Martha killed Nora or Martha is dead. She snapped. She killed that goat for survival. If killing Nora to get the phone is for survival to get off this island, then why not?
There are so many things in this episode.
It's a foreshadow, baby. It's a foreshadow. She comes back covered in blood. I think that would
be very curious to hear the process of this show, like, in terms of, because it doesn't come from source material, right? It's original. I'm just curious whether they had ideas about these characters beyond this. I mean, I'm sure they had some ideas, but also based on popularity and things like that, what is going to kind of pan out in season two, which we could end, you know, with our craziest predictions about season.
Maybe Sarah Stryker is just listening to this podcast and getting ideas. You know what?
She might be one of our 41 listeners.
We're up to 45. We're up to 45. So welcome, 45th listener. Thank you.
We're going up.
Even after, what was it? Was it last week's episode that I felt like we were really losing it with the stars?
Oh, I haven't published that one yet, so this is going to be a twofer.
So when we finally get a chance to talk to or hear Martha talk about what happens with the goat, and like that was a really intense moment, right, in the last episode. So did she say to Tony and Rachel, because she talks about them at the same time, did she say what you thought she would say about killing the goat? Or do you remember what she said?
I don't remember. What didn't she say? Something about it was about survival, right?
No, that's not what she says.
She says something about the goat being old.
Well, she says he was old. She checked his teeth after, but she felt like he kept following her and following her. And like he wanted to die so that she could live.
Yeah, he wouldn't leave me alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. She says he wouldn't leave me alone. So I but know. He and then oh no, she's talking to Dot in this moment. I'm sorry, she's talking to Dot. And Dot says he knows that you deserve a real life. So don't blow it.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's so many things that come full circle here. And the girls, in almost all of their conversations, they're talking to another girl, but they're also talking to themselves.
Yeah.
Right. So I think to hear Martha, like, basically say, like, I needed to get rid of this. I think she says that more than she does. It's about survival. Because do we even see her eat goat? We don't. All the other girls are talking about eating this goat. We never see her eat it or talk about it at all.
Well, she probably doesn't have to because the lychees are there.
Yeah, there's an abundance of fruit as well. But when
I would still want to eat some goat.
Fuck yeah. Been
starving for that long. But then Dot also saying, like, the whole, he knows you deserve a real life. Like, she's talking to herself clearly about her dad, right?
About her dad, yeah, for right. sure.
It was just, yeah, it wasn't what I expected. I expected Martha to give this really caring, like, oh, it was an animal and I can't believe I did that. And like, that's not at all what happens. And even earlier when Rachel's asking her, like, how did it feel? I want to live vicariously through you. It seems like for a minute she's like holding back a smile. Right. And then she's like, oh, well, you wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
I was like, there's so much going on in her brain right now as a character.
Which again, I think she's going to kill Nora, but that's just me.
All right. Well, you have it here, folks. We have April's crazy prediction for season two. before we get too far away from this story, we have in this episode, this is the third minor secondary character who was killed off this season. I shouldn't be laughing about that. What did we make of Quinn, the relationship with Nora and Quinn? I'll just start out to say that, like, clearly these two are some sort of atypical.
Yeah, neuroatypical. Yep.
Yeah. All over the internet, they say, like, the kind of unspoken presence of the autism spectrum. And I buy that to a certain degree. But I thought Quinn was a very sort of charming character in this, and you kind of appreciate, when we find out that he's died, even before the circumstances of it, and even when they break up, I just found it very sad.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And the emotional arc of that. But I'm going to ask the question that I also just feel like I'm coming back to. Did we need to go that far? Like, obviously we need Gretchen and Nora to meet, but I don't know. Just that seems to be my question all season about these deaths.
That's a good question. Did we need to go that far? In some ways, I think some of these deaths of these characters are the only thing that would have led these girls to this island.
Who's the suicide. That's who I couldn't think of the third one.
Yeah, the only things that lead them to say, or their parents to step in and be like, we got to do something serious here. Whether we don't want the same thing to happen to them or whatever it might be. And the story here between Nora and Quinn, it is beautiful. It is just like so innocent and lovely and funny and all of the things. And, I agree that it was heartbreaking, even when they just break up.
Oh my God, when she broke up with them, that was the saddest part of the episode for me.
Yeah.
Like, because we are like, but when she discovers his death, it's like in a very emotionally unattached way. We don't actually get to see her emotional response, really. We don't get to see a funeral. We don't actually get to say goodbye to him. The next time that we're involved in that death is she's visiting his murderer in prison, right? And even that is not any kind of strong emotional.
Well, that's not really encounter. Her thing, though, right? Like, that's not her thing. And I think that's important, you know, to point out is that the way that she's dealing with these emotions is very different from the other characters. And some of it probably is because she's neuroatypical, right? Like, I don't know. I loved it so much. And it was heartbreaking.
But the way she talks about her relationship with him is... reveals a depth of emotion that I don't think any of the other characters, like with Leah's first love with Jeff, like she is infatuated, I would say. And Nora was loved someone, right? That's
She said that their relationship was infinite. And I was was glorious.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a really beautiful moment. And, that actress, I think, does a really wonderful job of pulling off those really broadly emotional lines with a delicacy that doesn't make them sound cheesy. Because I think those kinds of lines out of the Leah character's mouth would sound like, yep, that's Leah being kind of the drama queen of this experience. But having them in Nora's character gave it a kind of profundity that I don't think other characters could have mastered. And I was thinking about actually not necessarily Leah's love story, but Tony's love story that again we get, I thought was pretty well drawn in the in her episode. But Tony is so not verbal about emotion, right? So that would also be terribly out of character. While we have a kind of typical, but also reserved hyper, you know, that in some ways Nora is kind of hyperverbal, right? She has a broad and deep vocabulary to be able to express herself. At the same time, a kind of shyness that
makes her reticent to speak often. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I was put off by how much she cares about what her sister thought. That was the worst to me. Like I think part of it is because of, it's very clear that when it comes to like intelligence, that is, you know, Nora's area of kind of expertise in this relationship, where if it comes to any type of social stuff, Nora knows, you know, this is not my strength. And she looks to her sister for that strength, but this just sucked.
Yeah.
You know, though, that actually struck me this time around as being, first of all, I didn't actually, the first time I saw this episode, that felt like a mismatch to me. I can't quite access that memory of watching it, but this time that struck me as being kind of honest to a way in which the advice is kind of misconstrued in a, like, which is Rachel is trying to be as nice as possible about her sister's, you know, boyfriend. But then when she's pushed for more information, she gives the very sort of, I would say, obvious observation that he talks over people. You know, in my sort of limited experience with neuroatypical people, like that is a characteristic that many people, I mean, not just the, you know, people with who are neuroatypical, but lots of us talk over people. But then you see that sort of Nora notices that and then can't seem to like not notice that. Right. And so I thought that was kind of honest in a very both youthful expression of looking for social help from a trusted friend, but also kind of misconstruing that social help. And then also regretting it, right? She seems to also appreciate that she maybe, or that she made the wrong decision about that. So
Rachel is pointing out, you know, these obvious things, which about Quinn, which are all beyond his
he can't help it, right? Like, he can't help that he does those things. And I have struggled with trying to understand Nora in some ways because, you know, Gretchen diagnoses her with severe anxiety. And I thought that maybe, you know, it was autism. And I still don't know. But I think that this conversation where Rachel is saying, like, here's all the things wrong with Quinn, I think it was also kind of pointing out some gender differences that we see in autism and the way autism presents itself. Because to me, the entire time, Nora seemingly probably is, you know, somewhere on the spectrum. And it doesn't take anything away, but I definitely think that interaction between Quinn and Nora and then the interaction with Nora and Rachel present some of those gender differences that Rachel can ignore in her sister because they present in a different way. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Maybe.
I think it also makes sense, but it also, I think it absolutely makes sense. And I also think it makes sense though that to say to someone who is neuroatypical that they talk over people, like when you just say that to a dude, right, like a neurotypical dude, he's a mansplainer, right? And isolated out of any sort of context, you could understand how someone who is, you know, is neurotypical can present that way, but it also comes at a different, like it just comes through a different context, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
So it is pretty kind of, I mean, the more I think about this, the more I'm sort of delighted by just how well and delicate and ambiguous these kind of interpretations are presented here. So it's definitely not a criticism of this at all. But yeah, it's just kind of fascinating how they wrote this. And I mean, I couldn't find anything about the actor who plays Quinn, online. So, cause I was wondering actually if they found a neuroatypical actor to do this, but I couldn't find out that information. So.
Yeah. I mean, that might be a point of contention that folks in the neuroatypical community might take might take badly, right? Because there are these characters who are often played by neurotypical actors, but there I like and dislike this relationship because I think it is rare to see such a positive relationship between neuroatypical characters, period. But then that also makes me, I think going back to your point, Katie, even more devastated that they just killed him off, right? Because it's like the old trope with queer relationships in film and television and fiction, that they, whenever they are shown, they end up in tragedy as if there's like no way that these relationships can possibly work out, right? And that's such a hard pill to swallow from a show that I otherwise think has a lot of positive messages for young people.
But I also think it was positive, like what Katie was saying is like, hey, we're presenting this thing and we're not coming right out and saying that these people have been diagnosed with anything.
Right.
Because they're just as normal, or whatever word you want to use, as every other character in the show, that their experiences are just as valuable or just as important. And I think that is a positive that they don't come out and say,
mm-hmm.
here's an issue, because it's not an issue. Like, you know, being in a relationship with a person, no matter what, when you are 17, 18 years old is a lot.
Sure. But there's also like a longer history of people with disabilities or neuroatypical people being sort of treated as unable to make decisions about relationships and about life and about, you know, like living on their own by themselves. And so maybe even being more explicit would have been a positive opportunity here, because Nora's very independent. And that might be a nice way to have some representation in here that is a positive positive experience for viewers who are also neuroatypical. Just, you know, whatever, Sarah, you want to do. Just keep doing what you're doing. Just give us some hints. Yeah. We need a preview.
Season 2.
We need a preview for season 2.
Killing everyone. We could say that too.
Yeah, we don't need to kill any more B characters, any more secondary characters. We don't need to kill anybody else. I mean, except for maybe Martha and or Nora. But they're primary. No. They're both alive. Everybody's fine. I don't know if we've ever mentioned this, but now that we've had Gretchen speak so candidly about her hatred of the patriarchy in such effusive ways, does anyone think it's weird that both of the debriefers are men?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that really struck me this time when we see Inspector Young. I don't know. I'm giving him a title as though he has a title. Young. Whatever this guy, I forget what his first name is. Mm-hmm. When he gives Leah her break outdoors, and then he shows her a picture of his daughter who made the quote school team, like that was, I was like, oh shit, yeah, this is a kind of strange contrivance that I don't understand the motivation of, to have two men stand as the authority for these girls who have just spent at least 23 days, right? Is this day 23?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excuse me. At least day 23 days in this survival setting with only each other.
Yeah. It's like, if the entire island experiment is to remove them from the boundaries of the patriarchy, and then the debrief is to try and squeeze them back into the boundaries of the patriarchy and see what happens. Like, is that part of the experiment? Like, what's going on here?
So typically, women in that capacity, I'm saying typically, right? It doesn't mean all of them. Women who would work in the capacity of like law enforcement are much more focused on like the helping aspect of law enforcement. And maybe that's not what Gretchen would have wanted in this situation, right? She wanted somebody who was going to be like firmer and get like these icky details in case there's like, you know, a lawsuit. She's already asked for this, right? Like, hey, get me some of this stuff so I can stop the family from suing me. So maybe there's a reason why she chose men. I don't know. I think it would have been better to have a man and a woman in the capacity to question them, interrogate them, whatever.
Yeah. The other issue, because it seems like clearly she's having them confront male authority after just doing this, like doing the retreat. But, and we actually see the way in which that, we see it with this young guy, right? We don't see it so much with the other one, whose name I have forgotten completely, that it's also taking a toll on him to play this role for them. Mm-hmm. However, there's the additional question of age, right? Like these girls are not considered in the society that they believe that themselves to be members of, and then the sort of one that they're going back into to be fully independent adults. And so that's also just a tricky thing to be like, is this part of the patriarchy or is this just part of juvenile versus adult relationships as well, right? Like,
this is just authority. It doesn't even matter. Like, you know, people listen to authority. We know this.
But if everything else is so calculated and Gretchen like hand selected these people to be people who she could you know, the whatever the psychiatrist is, he's so good at like detecting lies and emotion and the twitches on your faces to tell you that, whatever. And then this other guy she can manipulate because he's a gin soaked, washed up security guard or whatever, that she could have done the same thing and found the right woman if she was trying to create a particular dynamic in the interview room.
Well, that therapist, though, clearly there's something more to his story too, because I cannot think of any therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist, whatever, that would be involved in this and be okay with it, because it is so fucking unethical.
Yes. Well, and I can't think of an academic who would be involved in this.
Exactly.
Because it's so fucking unethical. And here we have Gretchen and all of her TAs.
It's like, they're not good guys.
And this is where I just don't know if the show is testing my limits of suspending disbelief, right? Like, could you get some sort of like lack of scruples psychiatrist who's brilliant to do this kind of work? Like, not likely, but I guess I could believe that for the sake of the show, or if that's actually going to be thematized in some way.
Mm. It's all about the money, baby.
Or it's all about releasing your family from prison. Who knows?
Yeah, we just don't know. We do not know.
No.
I do watch a lot of spy movies.
Yeah, that's true.
But the, I mean, not to kind of maybe put the horse in front of the cart in terms of our discussion, but is Gretchen just not self-reflective? Is that what we're, like, what sort of portrait of Gretchen are we left with? Because Gretchen here is painting for Nora this a community without patriarchy. But it's entirely controlled, right, by her. She's in these, right? She's making the decisions whether or not to rescue them at all times, right? And Nora knows this.
Mm-hmm.
Which, does Nora actually then live, can Nora actually live without any sort of fear or concern or anxiety, knowing that they could be rescued, right? Knowing that help could come, but it's continually being refused them.
Mm. Well, obviously Gretchen's not actually delivering on her promises, but in that case, why isn't Nora revealing the truth?
Well, maybe she does, because there is this distinct line that we know is the end of the season where shit gets real.
Yeah.
Right. True. So I think maybe something else is about to happen.
Mm.
And we just don't know what it is. And so right at the same time, Rachel falls in the hole, or sorry, not Rachel.
Leah.
Leah is in the hole and Nora's like, don't be mad. And then she's like, hey, come get her. Like, come get her out of the hole. They turn to Gretchen and one of her employees or whatever. And they're like, number four needs to be removed. And they say that phase two is currently underway and has absorbed all the water crafts, so we can't do it right now.
What the fuck?
Did you all miss that?
I missed that.
You know, that's funny that you say that, because I didn't miss that, but I didn't think about that until right now.
And I was like, what is happening right now? So, like, maybe they kill Nora. I don't even know what, like, I don't have a clue, but they know they need to get to the island because Leah knows shit. And the last thing we know from that particular time frame is they're like, phase two is underway. But that's all we know.
Oh, huh. Because I remember thinking, oh, I bet something's going on another island, on another experimental island.
It could be. But, like, we don't know because, again, the time frame is so screwed up. Like,
yeah,
I don't know what the time frame is on the island. I don't know what the time frame was off of the island, like with Nora's story. Has Nora been to the island before? Because she sure knows where all the cameras are. Right? Like, you're not just going to show up and know where all that shit is.
Yeah, I mean, she is very smooth with manipulating that space.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, there's just...
so many questions.
I think Avril's very right that the next season has to still be on the island.
Mm-hmm.
So, this time around, too, while I, like, appreciated that Nora wanted Leah to stop asking questions because it raised her anxiety, right? And it also implicates her, right? And that implication is problematic for what she wants, right? Particularly regarding her sister. But Leah's been acting like, there's some sort of contrivance here since day two. So, like, more of the same. I don't.
Yeah. I have no idea.
I don't either.
I feel like there was one more thing I wanted to ask you about that I didn't write down, and now it's never going to come back to me. Nope. I'll have to save it for the next episode.
No.
Oh, wait, no. Because now we agree that Devin is Gretchen's son. Okay. But we were entertaining a conspiracy theory that Gretchen's son and Quinn were in the control group, where the island where the boys are. And that is actually how Quinn died. Is that still on the table? Could Gretchen's son have been the plant in the control group?
So I think that would have had to have been a prior experiment. It yes. cannot be this Twilight of Adam. Oh. But when they find when Nora, I'm getting all the names mixed up. When Nora finds out that Quinn died, she looks it up, she Googles it, and she's reading a news article. And don't worry, I paused it and read the whole news article. So there were three college juniors arrested for the death of Quinn Miller. However, for some reason, they were not taken immediately into custody, and there's a lot of questions surrounding his death. So, I don't know.
I think that's what it says. That's what it's saying. So, wait, but we're not accepting that what Leah sees on those TVs, I don't think that's happening while she's actually in the containment facility. I think that's pre-recorded from before times that has been edited for her to see.
Well, that would also explain why there's not someone else in the room.
Also,
like if that's already been recorded.
Twilight is the night before, dawn is the morning of.
I mean,
the next morning, right?
That could be some poor TA's office.
True.
That happens to have a red door. They're just there to study the footage.
But it could be old footage. That does make sense. Twilight is the before. Mm-hmm. So maybe there is still thread to this theory.
Because if you recall, in the excellent series written by Stephanie Meyer, Twilight is the first book. Breaking Dawn is the final.
And that's how you can remember when Twilight and Dawn is. That's amazing. It's amazing. And we have to also say that that Devin, my brother, actually came up with this theory. This is not our theory.
Yes.
We're sharing it with you, but it is his theory that the fraternity is the boys on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's still,
I think it holds water.
Yeah, I really think it does.
I mean, it certainly makes sense of Gretchen's interpretation of patriarchy, mm-hmm. That the fraternity is patriarchy, right? That's what she
does say that, yeah.
Whoa. So we do plan to come back with post-episodes, post-production episodes, dealing with some themes that we've touched on in previous episodes that we want to dig a little deeper into. But it's also March in the worst semester of our lives. So it may be a while before we roll those out, but they will be in advance, certainly, of the next season, which we don't have a drop date for, but...
I think we do now.
We do?
Do we have a drop date?
Oh my
God. Or maybe it was just 2022.
The Wild Stocks podcast.
2022? That's literally a million years ago.
Well, it came out in 2021, like in the new year.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
January 1st.
It was announced on December 19th that there would be a season two.
Maybe it was came out in December.
Yeah. Is that when it came out? I don't know. Fingers crossed for early 2022. Which, although that sounds really far away, we've now been in lockdown for a year.
Yeah, it was a long year, though. It was a long...
It was a really long
fucking year. Oh, my God. Anyway. So, rewatch the second time without us and leave your comments at our Twitter account, The Wild Docs Podcast.
Yeah,
we will respond, of course. And if anyone is interested in joining us for as a guest in our any of our future, probably over the summer, recorded episodes about these themes, then hit us up there with a DM in the Twitter at the Wild Docs Podcast.
Yeah. Wild Docs Podcast.
And until then, have a nice rest of your semester.
March
and April and May.
Spring.
There we go. That one.
All right.
Until summer.
We'll talk to y'all soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.